right, it's post-show recap theater. My name is Grace. I'm here with my co-host Ariel. Ariel, how you doing?
Oh my god, I just got bit by a dolphin.
Oh, a dolphin.
No.
It's a classic bit from the movie that we're talking about. A big split. We did it again 2 weeks in a row, Ariel. We just gave
this
away
is
the
not,
biggest
you know,
plot device.
In fairness to me, this is in the trailer.
Yeah.
So, you know, George Clooney, yeah. I don't know what to tell you.
You know what the problem is? Everything in this movie is in the trailer.
Two minutes of trailer paradise.
Yeah, that's the whole movie, the whole plot right there in the trailer. Yeah, we're talking about Ticket to Paradise, a romantic comedy starring George Clooney and Julia Roberts. Before we get into the pod, I just want to mention, make sure you subscribe to the Post Show Recaps Theater feed at postshowrecaps.com/movies, or you can search Post Show Recaps Theater in any of your podcatcher apps, wherever you get your podcasts, and rate and review. That would be much appreciated. It helps us get eyes on our product as we talk about the Julia Roberts comeback, Ariel?
Julia Roberts would want you to subscribe. Like,
yeah, she would
want you to do this. So I think it's a win-win.
Unlike her, she would say no to her boyfriend who proposes to her many times in this movie, but say yes to us, I think is the key. Ariel, Ticket to Paradise. This is a movie, I think, rom-coms. You know, we had a La Lost City earlier this year. We had Bros, which did not great. the movie was fine. We had conflicting sort of feelings about Bros, but it didn't do very well at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
Ticket to Paradise, you know, it goes up against, you could say that, Black Adam, and doesn't do as well, but it does pretty well. It makes $20 million domestically. It makes over $100 million worldwide. So it did pretty well for a rom-com.
I think. A movie that doesn't involve people flying around.
Yeah.
And shooting.
Well, they do. They go on a plane to Bali.
So. For people who can fly in planes but can't fly themselves and aren't shooting like electricity or eye lasers at each other, that's pretty good numbers. That's pretty good money.
It is. I was pretty excited by this movie. Not that I thought it would be great, but I do really like George Clooney and Julia Roberts. And, you know, as much as they gave a lot away, you know, they're a divorced couple who hate each other seemingly, and they're going to travel to Bali to stop their daughter from making sort of the same mistake as they did, which was getting married really young on a whim. And so they have to like team up and they hate each other. And they just, you know, I think the thing is they're, you know, are there movie stars anymore? You know, rock starred in Black Adam. I think he's probably a movie star, even if he's like, you know, really hasn't had like a huge hit. He's still like a movie star.
Right.
George Clooney and Julia Roberts are movie stars. And so I was quite excited to just like watch them. And it's pretty palpable on screen, I think, as well.
Capital A. Yeah, I think what you're getting at, like the capital A list actor, A for actor, A for A plus actor, like, and just feeling a little bit of a specific time. You know, we talk sometimes about nostalgia and how it comes into play and how sometimes it's weaponized against us. And I mean, who doesn't have at least one amazing George Clooney or Julia Roberts movie that they really enjoy watching and they have enjoyed watching and remember fondly? To your point, they're so charming. It kind of doesn't matter that some of the script isn't great because it's just really fun to watch them. And it's like these people that you quote unquote think you know, right, or have gotten to know over their careers and, you know, and even outside of careers, headlines and all that. And it just kind of works. Like, in spite of things that aren't great that we'll get into, I think it's, I was really worried that even they couldn't save it. Cause to your point, you kind of feel like you see the movie throughout the trailer and then you're like, what is even the point of seeing this? By the end of the movie, I'm like, oh, I'm glad I watched this. It's sweet. and I'm someone who likes rom-coms, but, you know, I think they knew what they were doing and they checked all the boxes.
I agree. Can I just, there's a tweet I saw the day. It came from a Twitter account called Film Updates. And this is sort of like, feels a bit like I'm already going to, I think, like critique this survey that they did. But basically, ooh, this question is percentage of people who showed up for a recent theatrical release solely for a particular star. So basically, this was done by PostTrack, who will sometimes survey people outside of movies. Okay. And they asked people, like, did you come because a specific movie stars in this movie? And when they said yes, they said, okay, who is that? And so these are based on fairly recent-ish movies about a year ago. I know also in the comments of this, there's like a couple of movies that we were like, well, what about this for like this person for this movie? Like, oh, they didn't have data for this movie. So, you know, there's some like, this is not definitive by any means, but do you want to just guess who's maybe on this list of like percentage of people showing up for a recent theatrical release based on a particular star? And then they have percentages for how many people said, yes, I came to this movie because I wanted to see this star. Do you have any guesses?
For this movie specifically or just in general?
Well, for this, this movie has not been tracked. So,
okay.
Or at least didn't make the list.
Right. Yeah. Guesses. I don't know. I think Black Adam is too recent too.
So it's on there, I'll tell you.
So, oh, okay. So maybe The Rock.
Yes. So 44% of people who went to Black Adam said I came because I just wanted to see The Rock. Yeah.
Yeah.
Number two on the list of highest percentages. Yeah.
Wow.
That's good. You got it. I'll give you the rest. Here's the truth. So there's like 40% of people who went to go see House of Gucci said they came to see it. That's amazing, right?
I came in to see the movie.
I came to see the movie. 39% of people who went to see Don't Worry, Darling, so they went to see Harry Styles. That makes sense, right?
Ooh, yes, that makes sense. Yeah.
37% of people who went to see, well, I don't know what the time on it is. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, went to see Leonardo DiCaprio. Bullet Train, 35% of people wanted to see Brad Pitt. 33% of people went to see Spider-Man No Way Home, wanted to see Tom Hanks. And 20% said they wanted to see Zendaya, which is amazing. 25% of people who went to Elvis wanted to see Tom Hanks. But number one, no surprise.
I'm so sorry to those people.
I know. 57% of people who went to see the movie Red Sparrow were like, yeah, I only came to see Jennifer Lawrence. I don't know this movie, and I can't believe Jennifer Lawrence is like the top of this list for whatever reason.
I never saw it, but I think it's that like Russian spy movie. So I think out of those 57%, at least 20% of the 57% went to hear her accent.
Yeah, that's fair. So anyway, I feel like this is kind of a bogus. Like this list is like not great data here. But like
the list is flawed.
But no, I do think it spurred me to think about like who are people going to see in the movies. And I'm sure that once like this movie, I feel like there's got to be a lot of people who are just like, yeah, I'll go see George Clooney and Julia Roberts in this movie. They do feel like big movie stars. So, and they're in a rom-com together.
They do. Yeah. And the two of them. Ugh.
Yeah, together.
Is this their, they were in the Oceans trilogy together. But
yeah,
not many examples of them together that I can think of.
I mean, what has Julia Roberts been in recently? I don't think very much, right? Isn't the whole she was
Aaron
in Brockovich
TV show? 2, Electric Boogaloo? No, uh-huh. She was in Homecoming, yeah, which was amazing, first season. But I can't remember. I know she's
apparently
been
she did time. Another show called Gaslit. She did a show called Gaslit.
Right.
I didn't
see it.
Yeah.
Not enough rom-com energy in that one.
Yeah, really. All right. Well, I think it's a fun little movie to go see at the theater. I think people could go see it. I mean, if you waited till it was streaming, you could do that as well. You wouldn't be missing. This is not groundbreaking, this movie. Yeah.
No, I think for sure if you enjoy, I will put on my Grace hat. If you enjoy rom-coms.
Yeah, that's right.
I think you'll enjoy this one. It's Agreed. Cute. Do not run. Walk very slowly to the theater. You can wait for the bus. Although movie's probably not going to be out for long. I don't know. Like, even though it's doing well, I don't think it has the legs that like Smile does, for instance, where it will kind of continue to have positive word of mouth and people will like seek it out. I think at some point, you know, it'll peter out, but it's adorable. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel too long. I think it's what, like an hour 45. So that's, that's like the ceiling for this kind of movie. I'm always hoping for the 90, but I will take the 110, the 115.
I know.
It's adorable. I think if you're seeking this kind of movie out, you know what you're getting, you know what your ticket is buying you.
That's right. All right. Well then let's spill the PSRT. Did I say it right, Ariel?
Yes, you said it right.
All right.
Perfect dolphin. Perfect dolphin.
Great. So David, played by George Clooney, and Georgia, played by Julia Roberts, they are a divorced couple who absolutely hate each other and regret their marriage 20 years ago. When their daughter, Lily, who's played by Caitlin Dever, graduates from law school, she goes on vacation with her friend, Ren, played by Billy Lord, to Bali, where she meets a young Balinese seaweed farmer named Getty, played by Maxime Boutier, and the two quickly fall in love and decide to get married. So David and Georgia fly back to Bali for the wedding and decide to, they don't fly back, they go to Bali for the wedding and decide to work together to sabotage the relationship. When Lily discovers that her parents have stolen the wedding rings, she demands they either get on board with the marriage or fly home. David and Georgia realize they'll ruin their relationship with their daughter, so they give their blessing. When Getty says they must give their blessing or the marriage won't go through because of a Balinese like ceremonial thing that happens. And he says, you don't need it, but I will give you my blessing. David and Georgia say they don't regret their marriage either because they would have never had Lily. The morning of the wedding, Georgia also tells Paul, played by Lucas Bravo, that she cannot marry him after many, many failed proposals.
At least two.
Yeah. David and Georgia get with getting back together, but they sort of pull away and are like, no. But after they say goodbye to Lily, they both decide to stay in Bali to be close to their daughter, perhaps reconcile with their feelings for each other, and they jump off the boat. There's not a lot in this movie, Ariel, but, you know, that's it, really.
Somehow it was way longer than what you just said.
I know. And I was like thinking about how to recap it. It's like, you know, there's like Paul gets bit by a snake when he tries to propose to Georgia, and there's a whole thing
in
the hospital, and then like
when
he proposed and Lily's like, what do you mean you're gonna get married? He doesn't make you happy. And there's a whole, that's kind of like a B plot in the movie as well. But
C plot, if we're talking about dolphins. C-S-E-A.
Yeah. But most of this movie is like George Clooney and Julia Roberts, like kind of like hating each other, having to work together, even though they're like enemies. It was fun. It was good.
Yeah. I think for me, the further along it got, as we keep saying, like there's so much of the plot in the trailer, the further along it got, the more interesting it got in a way, because like you're more at the mercy, you're less depending on like these tropes and some of this like not funny script, full disclosure for me personally, but the George Clooney, Julia Roberts like charm offensive comes in real strong in like the last 40 minutes, I would say, when they're like conflicted about their emotions with each other. Like you just believe them. Like before that, it's kind of like, okay, I'm watching George Clooney and Julia Roberts. Then it's like, oh, these two people, the lake house. Oh, he never sold it. Oh my God. Like it is very adorable.
It is adorable.
And the love, like it's the feel good quality of the movie, or like the feel good aspect of what you want, and like the family stuff and the relationship with the daughter and trying to be a better parent. Like all that stuff actually really clicks in a way that I was frankly surprised by.
There's just the moment when, so they're in the, they go on a, they're going to see something. I can't remember what they're going to see. And George Clooney is supposed to tie up the boat and he ties it to a log and the tide comes in. And so the boat and the log float out together. And the visual is actually not bad, that he's like, oh, the boat's floating away. He's like, no, it's just be high tide. And then he's like, what'd you tie it to? And he's like, a log. And then like, you see the log come out underneath the cliff. And, you know, it's not bad. It's not bad. It's pretty funny. And so they're in this, they're stuck like in the jungle for a night. And this is Julia Roberts and Caitlin Dever, Lily, are getting along for sort of like, you know, they have a very cute relationship. And she's like, oh, the matches to start the fire in my bag. And she goes to check her bag and she finds the rings that they had stolen to try and like disrupt the wedding. It was like a sign you shouldn't get married if the rings are gone, which I did like the subversion, because that's in the trailer, them stealing the rings. And Getty, it like immediately is like, so you guys have the rings, you guys hate me and don't want me to get married to your daughter, so like you should probably just give them back. And I thought that was kind of fun that he like immediately knows exactly what they're doing. That felt like a subversion.
He's no dummy.
He's nice in this movie. He's like, he's not, you know, the movie isn't whether Lily and Getty, like, it's not a will they won't they for them, you know.
No, it's will her parents let her. Won't
yes.
They?
Yes. And so then they get in a fight, and so Lily goes to David, her dad, and it, or like to her, and is like, you know, she had the rings. And George Clooney is like, oh, you did, I knew it. Like throws her immediately under the bus, even though it doesn't work at all.
And that was in the trailer, but like it's still at that point, by that time, it like it's hitting still because now you have like all this runway of their relationship.
Yeah.
And it's George Clooney, like we said, like these people are mega stars for a reason. Like, yeah, you could argue, will a George Clooney movie, you know, is it going to be up against like Marvel numbers? No, but like at the end of the day, you can feel comfortable having these people helming your movies, and it's not going to be, you know, not worth it.
There's a scene as well where David is on the boat coming back with when they get picked up, I believe, on the scooter. There's the one, the lady who sometimes pops up, who I think would be a great White Lotus addition. Ariel is the woman when the plane's in turbulence and she yells and she's like, "You effed up our plane." They drop an F-bomb in this movie, which I was alarmed by. And then they find her. She finds them on the scooter and they ride home. But when they're on the boat, and at this point, Paul has proposed to Georgia. And so Lily, she leaves, Getty's driving the boat, and she goes over to, maybe it's on the way, I can't remember. And she like nestles into like George Clooney. And she's like, "How do you feel about mom getting married?" And he's like, you know, it's like an old friend you haven't talked to in a while who like is getting married, you know? And she kind of like pushes back on it. And I just do think the emotional beats of like these two people who were in a relationship that like didn't work at the time, but like have this child together. And I thought that the tension for Lily of it's not only that her parents are telling her to do something she doesn't want to do. She graduated law school and she's going to decide, I think a big part here is that she's going to like live in Bali with Paul for the rest of her life. She's going to live this sort of like nomadic lifestyle, which we could get into there's a lot of pushback, I think, on this specific part of the movie about Bali culture and all of this stuff. But they're wanting her to not make this mistake while doing the classic parent thing of not even really talking to her about it, of like making sure that it's okay. Eventually they do. But you know, the fact that they do have Lily, and Lily is upset that they seem to have hated their marriage so much and they regret it so much without thinking about the fact that like, well, you got me. And that's like the conclusion they come to later is like, you know, I don't regret it because you came out of the marriage is like the sweet thing. But that's a really hard thing for Lily have to like think through. So the movie's just like a little bit emotionally deeper than, you know, what I was expecting from it. Yeah.
And I think it does make sense. It's realistic that a child would internalize, especially because like clearly she was fairly young when her parents divorced. Mm-hmm. So that she would internalize in some way that it was her fault or had some like bearing on their love for her. And it's also entirely realistic that the parents wouldn't notice or the parents wouldn't like think that that was a thing.
Right. Right.
Because of course they love her in their minds. And she's like the only reason that it was even worth it for them to have been together. I think that's that one of the consistent things is how much they like fret over her and care about her and argue to each other about their daughter. So like clearly, you know, there's never any doubt or, you know, doubts cast on how they feel about her. But to your point, even, you know, you have another to her credit, Caitlin Dever is a really strong actress as well. We have seen her be truly great in comedies, in dramas. You know, I'm thinking of Booksmart. I'm thinking of the Netflix show with Toni Collette and I can't remember now, but she was really good in that. It was super, super dramatic role.
Not Dopesick. Is Dopesick?
No, although Dopesick also very
I know
good.
What you're thinking about. Dear Evan Hansen. She's in Justified.
It's called Unbelievable.
She was in Justified.
And Justified, she was young in that too. But Unbelievable is the Netflix show that I was thinking about.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
But we have seen her be very good in a lot of things, and it's great to have, you know, she's a fairly important character as we're getting at, because she's the daughter and she's like the linchpin emotionally of a lot of things in the movie, not just the plot. And she's a great actress, and you get so much mileage out of her reacting to her parents and like kind of being over their nonsense and you know, having doubts about their intentions and how she should or shouldn't have them in her life. And full credit to her, because that can't be easy to have to, you know, be up against these titans of the industry.
Yeah, she holds her own. Like, she's like literally like, you know, the scene where she says like, "You either can get on board with this or you can go home," you know. So it's good.
I believed her. I was like, oh damn.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she's very strong. What do you think of Billy Lord in here? Billy Lord been in a bunch of American Horror Story seasons. Was also in Booksmart, I believe. Hasn't been much. Was in all three of the last Star Wars movies, I believe.
Right. Now I'm remembering who she was. Yes. She was like in the Rebel team.
She doesn't get much here.
I gotta be honest. Yeah. She doesn't get much here, and the little that she does get, I'm not getting much here from her. Like, it's like in the beginning, it's like she's a walking advertisement for Trojan brand condoms, which, you know, we support prophylactics, right? If that's what you want. Sure. That's good. Clearly Trojan does, because they had some sponsorship deal in this movie, because it comes up more than once. But she's a pretty, like, I guess she's
pretty
not
forgettable. She's very forgettable.
Definitely forgettable. Not like I was going to say something about selfishness. I think it's more like self-involved, but clearly she loves her friend. She's literally in Bali for her. You know, she's always like worried about what Caitlin Dever's character is going through, but like pretty like surface level character, both between her lines feel sillier than a lot of other things in this movie. And sometimes she's just very almost awkwardly social, like she just walk away from a conversation, like, okay, my part in the scene is done, I'm leaving now, and just like walk away.
There's like the scene, the only, and it's only funny because of how George Clooney reacts, which is when she's like, she's like mouthing to George Clooney, like, I'm gonna take this guy home, and then the guy, his pregnant wife comes and like sits down, and he's like, you sure about that? He walks away, and then it's just like, that's the end of the scene. Like, I feel like if you're gonna play the sidekick in the rom-com, like, you know, this is kind of the most sidekicky we get, because neither, like, it's not like George Clooney or Julia, I guess Paul, but Paul's not a sidekick, he's the like other, he's the third guy, guy, I guess. I don't know who the second is if Paul's the third guy.
The second yes, person is too complicated.
That's right She's not very memorable, like she doesn't have any line, there's no quirkiness about her to degree, she's not commentating on anything, like I feel like The Lost City had the assistant who's like hilarious in the bit. And also the person who runs all of her social, or am I thinking of Marry Me? Maybe I'm thinking of Marry. That's another good rom-com from this year.
Marry Me, Say Yes.
I feel like they both had assistants. I feel like Lost City and Marry Me both.
Everyone's getting an assistant these days. There's going to be an assistant in The White Lotus season 2.
Yeah, that's right.
But you brought up, George Clooney, and I have to tell you, and I'd love to hear what your perspective was on the scene as we go into the scene, but George Clooney at some point, I'd say like in the first-ish half of the movie, is sitting, or maybe around their midpoint, is sitting at a bar alone, can't sleep, whatever. And then Billy Lord's character comes in, and I'm like, oh no, are they going to do this? Like, so disgustingly toxic that I thought that George Clooney was going to sleep with his daughter's best friend? Because I was like, why are they at this bar together? Please, no.
That would have been maybe a step too far for me, I think.
But was there any thought in your mind that was a possibility, or am I just like a disgusting human?
No, it doesn't feel like a Clooney move, you know, a little, you know, I think he feels like a guy who just has he had any controversies? Let's see. Let's go Wikipedia hunting.
Let's go cancel hunting.
Yeah, let's see if you can cancel this guy.
I think there was some stuff with like Haiti. Oh no, I think I'm thinking of Sean Penn.
Well, I think he did it. Sean Penn definitely could be canceled. Yeah. Yeah, his whole thing is like some people have. Yeah, can I? Sometimes you have like a personal conflict section of Wikipedia. This one is like activism and public advocacy for George Clooney. He's a supporter of gay rights. He believes in gun control. He supports the recognition of the Armenian genocide. Like, I think he's like,
wow, he's checking all the boxes.
I know. Right. So he's not doing this. He's not doing this.
No. And I was like, oh wow, this would be such an incredible misstep for this movie to even go there.
But listen, I mean,
I'm really glad that it didn't, because we have seen it before in shittier movies.
There's a TV show. I will not name it in lieu of spoiling it, but I was like, whoa, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? What are we doing? Stop, please, enough. Yeah. What'd you think of the father? What'd you think of Getty's father, who keeps making jokes about like, and now we must do the blood oath?
We can talk about the cultural appropriation part of it insofar as there is any. I think they're trying to thread this needle of like, we're going to subvert your expectations of like these two white people who come to this foreign land and how they would be treated. They get some comedic mileage out of, you know, the mother needs a translator and she goes on and on and on, but she's only saying welcome. Like, it's, some of it feels like, you didn't need that. Like, this movie feels like it should be above that. But you know, I think overall the I think that the, to answer your question, the character of her father is less problematic as far as I'm concerned, because he's just kind of like a silly guy who's trying to like play pranks on George Clooney's character. So that's like, that totally reads like, okay, he's just like a human. Yeah, some of the other stuff is just like, you know, and I would think at this, in this day and age, they would have stuff in this movie that's actually real as far as the customs, or at least feels real, feels like it reflects the place that they're actually in, regardless of where they filmed it, like where they claim to be. You know, they're in Bali, so these are like,
well, Bali, so there was silly controversy about where you see this at all, that it's like,
I'm curious about it.
It actually wasn't filmed in Bali, and so people were saying this, and then the creators of the movie were like, hey, we did try to film in Bali, and due to the COVID restrictions they had in place, which, like, whatever, they're like, we couldn't film in Bali. And the Bali is still being like, hey, it's fine. People will come to Bali because they think it was filmed in Bali. So don't worry. Stop saying it wasn't filmed in Bali.
Stop telling people it's not in Bali.
Like ex-nay on the not Bali. like stop talking, but it's fine. And then the other controversy that, you know, I think that there's something to this, and I think people, there's some people who might listen and be like, gosh, this podcast is super woke, which is that the character who play, the guy who plays Getty, is Maxime Aboute. He is half Bali and then half French. And so the thing that the controversy is happening is that, so he's of Indonesian and French descent, is that it's imposing Western beauty standards on Asian men, is the controversy that's out there, that they pick somebody who is supposed to be like a Bali native, but he fits these very like Western ideas of standards of beauty. I don't know. I don't know if it's for me to say. So that's,
you're never, I agree with your last point of like, who are we to say specifically as far as like the right and wrong of it, but like also the bar is very low. So at least they tried. I mean, not that we should give them credit for small things, but you know, it's, I'll say this, this day and age, if only for skeptical PR reasons, a big company putting out a big movie like this is going to do like a lot of due diligence beforehand to try to, you know, minimize this kind of thing.
Yeah. So, you know, they, yeah, I don't know.
Scathing remarks. That wasn't really filmed in Bali. It's like, okay, so we have to, anything, God forbid, we get on the Vancouver train and like everything that's filmed in Vancouver, you know, Vancouver's like, don't tell people this.
Yeah. I mean, there's the other small thing is like some people saying that it sort of gives the like colonial gaze to the tourism industry of like, and there's a very common that we're like the Western middle class, like female is like, I'm going to go and be free. I'm going to live here. And like,
I mean, just Julia Roberts herself, who was the face of Eat, Pray, Love, right? It was a book sensation turned into a movie sensation. So, you know, if there's anyone that would represent that, it's her.
There's a professor from Sydney's Macquarie University who says, films like this perpetuate the colonial gaze that reduces places and people merely as a landscape for Western characters to stand out or assert agency. The gaze depends on the invisibility of labor of local people and the exploitation of natural resources to support tourism. I think that's a fair critique, and also, like, it's a fun movie.
Yeah, clearly, you know, that person clearly has more of a critical eye than we claim to have on this podcast. But to your point, it sounds valid. I understand it. And the movie, you know, your mileage may vary on what the responsibility is in a movie like this in particular versus the responsibility writ large of like,
agreed,
the film industry.
I totally agree. I think it's a really good point. Yeah, that like, yeah, whose responsibility is it to like upend, like, you know, the capitalist gaze or whatever they whatever the phrase was, they said. Yeah, those are the controversies of the film, Aaron. There's a new section called
Controversy Corner.
Controversy Corner.
to go with Coleman cast.
To go with the Coleman cast. Yeah. I'm doing that over on The Crown, season 3 or 4 next week. So,
ooh, oh my God. Coleman cast herself. But you mentioned Paul, right?
Yeah, the boyfriend. So yeah, Julia Roberts' boyfriend.
Julia Roberts' character, who is a pilot.
Yeah, he's a pilot. Yeah.
And he shows up. Not okay with this. He shows up and he gets blamed for like the plane thing, like the turbulence.
Yeah, he does get blamed. Yeah, this one lady is very mad at him. Yeah, about the turbulence. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you almost caused us, you ruined our effing trip, I think she says. Yeah, something mm-hmm. like that.
But I didn't like the reason I brought him up. I didn't like that he surprises Julia Roberts' character. It's like, surprise, I'm driving your plane. Like, it was
flying a plane.
It feels a little clingy to me.
It does feel. I do like the scene when Paul goes to knock on her door and they've spent the night together. They did not sleep together, but they've spent the night together, David and Georgia. And so they have to pretend that it's each other's rooms. And then they have to switch rooms. They basically gaslight Paul into thinking that he had the wrong room.
Which, to his credit, he was like, oh, I totally knew what was going on. I was like, oh, wow, no, they totally would have gotten me. Like, totally would have fooled me.
Paul also has to do the thing that many actors have had to do, which is fake being poisoned. He had to act as if he'd been poisoned.
Yes, he has to act like the paralysis is moving through his body in real time because he was bitten by a snake.
I guess the snake was venomous rather than poisonous. Poisonous is if you eat something. It's poisonous. So the snake is venomous.
Something
right?
I learned today, sure.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, snakes aren't poisonous. They're venomous. Unless you eat
What if they're on a plane?
But then
Julia Roberts sucks out the poison or the venom.
Yeah, that, and then she's like doing the, like, her mouth is not bad. I was like, all right, this is a segment.
It was very, I was like, I got to Google if this is a good idea because God forbid this ever happens to me. I'm going to think of Julia Roberts and be like, well, she did it and it kind of seems like it saved his life. So maybe this is a good idea, but I think it's a bad idea.
I think you have to do it like immediately before the venom spreads, I think. Like if he's been on the ground for a long time, I think it's, don't try it. What it's going to do. But I think if you could see the venom like on the bite mark in your arm and you like suck it out and move it, that might work. I don't know.
It might help.
Not a doctor.
It might help, but I would worry about your mouth.
Could you ask Dr. Amanda? I'm not a doctor, so could you ask a doctor?
Dr. Amanda, you're a snake doctor, correct? I need to ask you a question.
That makes it sound like she's a very shady doctor.
She's a, what is it? A snake oil sales area.
Yeah. A snake oil charmer doctor.
Snake charmer. Yeah, I mean, we're going to get into season 2 of White Lotus in Sicily. Yes. So I'm sure snakes are going to come up because I know about the world.
Sicily.
Sicilians.
Oh, do you know who played the snake in this movie?
It slithered away so suddenly. I almost didn't get a look at her. It was Scarlett Johansson.
She's racking up a lot of acting credits, according to us, this year.
She's
just making
it.
A real run at the Oscars. Yeah,
she's just killing it. And I don't just mean killing people by putting venom into their
life. Yeah, she's venomous. Scarlett Johansson's venomous. Yeah.
I'm surprised. I mean, I'm surprised that you didn't tell me that this was shot in, you know, they couldn't film in Bali. So they decided to shoot it in Hawaii. And then what's her name showed up. From Easy A and
Emma Stone
and saying like, I am an indigenous Hawaiian person.
Oh wow. We went much like the trip to Bali, we went a long way for that joke.
I'm sorry, I had my passport here and I was like, I'm willing to go anywhere.
That was not a critique of somebody who will go a long way for a joke. It's good. I like that.
I have traveled far and wide. I am parched.
Should we break down that joke? It's a joke about how Emma Stone once played a native Hawaiian in a movie. Yeah. Which is essentially the same, you know, the same reason we criticized Scarlett Johansson because did she play? Didn't she do this? She did. That's the reason, right?
Yeah, there was.
Oh,
there
no. Was, she wanted to play a trans times. Man. She wanted to play
a trans
man.
There were a couple of things.
Yeah.
Of her just saying, like, why is it a big deal?
Oh, I could play a tree if I wanted, I think she said. Yeah, that's right.
Scarlett, you have to be cool.
Yes, Scarlett. Yes. What did you think of the ending? Because I feel like they do this thing twice in this movie where they like kind of try to be like, maybe that my feelings are back. And they're like, oh, no. And they like stop kissing. But the end of the movie is kind of like, I guess it's like, it could just be that they stay, but there's very much this energy of like, we're going to stay and try to be together. Right.
They're like, you know, they're holding hands. Now at this point, they're on the ship on the way back.
Yeah.
You know, and she has, Julia Roberts' character has now been proposed to twice by the poisoned pilot, or the venomed pilot.
Yes.
And so, you know, clearly she's free now to pursue whomever she wants, but to his, I guess, very low bar of credit, you know, George Clooney's character isn't like, oh, great, now you're free for me. She kind of like comes to him in a sense, or they meet in the middle, I guess. Anyway, so now they're like on this boat at the very end and they're leaving and they're kind of like holding hands a little bit right before that. They're kind of like almost kissing. Like that part actually felt really realistic to me of like, you've known this person for a very long time. And even if you haven't been physically intimate with them recently, there's clearly history there and there's like a shorthand there and it's not as awkward, you know, like first kisses and that kind of physical intimacy when you're getting to know someone can be very awkward. And with them, it's like, it's not awkward. But the reason I say all this is because they kind of ask each other. He's like, are you sure? She's like, He's like, yeah.
There's a thing that they keep saying to the movie. Is it why wait or something like that? Like something like that of like the idea being like, go for it now or like not that exactly.
Yes. Like why not now? Like, there's the implication that like they're in Bali and they're in this magical, you know, wonderful place, and to leave would be a mistake. And then they're like, oh, should we get off the boat or not? And I think it's something like, why wait? And then they jump off the boat together.
It's that sentiment, right? Of like, you know, carpe diem, essentially, right? Of like, live in the moment. Like we might not have been right back then, but maybe it's, you know, it's right for us to be now.
I gotta be honest, you know? I hated the freeze frame at the end when they jump off.
You don't like it? Yeah, I know. Yeah,
like I think we talked a little bit, or maybe I was getting a little bit at like the nostalgic quality of some of the movie, and like it feels in ways both good and bad, I guess, like a movie that you could have seen in theaters like, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Agreed. This would have been a huge hit like 15 years ago, I think.
And and some of the things, so now, namely this freeze frame at the end when they're midair and then we're going to make it like color fragmented and whatever. I was like, oh God, this is so like early thousands.
So here the line is like, he's like, oh, I could see myself spending more time here. And he goes, someday. Mm-hmm. And she says, why save the good stuff for later? Which is a thing that they've said to, I think, each other. And Lily, I can't remember first brings it up, but why save the good stuff for later? And then decide to like jump. And they're both like, yeah. And then they
why
jump
save
off
the good
frame.
Stuff for later? Let's do the freeze frame now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Should we end the pod on a freeze frame? It's much harder in an audio medium.
I'm frozen right now. Oh, no, but I'm thinking, damn it. I ruined it. But another thing they do right after the movies is like, and I got really excited at first.
Yes.
And then I was like, this isn't a very good example.
I know.
But they did bloopers.
Bloopers need to come back. The post-credit, you know what? I complain a lot that movies have just like, my brain is broken of like immediately a movie will end. It doesn't matter what movie it is. I was seeing Tar, a like critically acclaimed Oscar film we're going to talk about. And I was like, I just got to fucking check if there's, I don't know. It's I'll bleep that. I was like, I got to check if there's a post-credit scene. Just in case. What if there is? There's absolutely no way this movie has.
What if she's playing the piano after just doing, she's conducting or something?
Yeah, and then I was watching Ticket to Paradise and they did the mid-credit bloopers. Like, that's got to make a comeback. That's Rush Hour has the most classic one. Have you seen that? This came up on my Twitter the other day where Jackie Chan goes, jeez, and he's trying to say freeze. It is classic. It is classic.
It's great. Rush Hour, that's such a great one. That series overall had some wonderful credit bloopers, bloopers over credits. Why not? There's Why so not? Much footage that you have. And obviously, you know, some genres would lend themselves better. I don't think it would go well with like a very dramatic
Tar. We would do Tar. Yeah. Yeah. Black Adam would have been good, I think.
Or even like a horror movie, although arguably a horror movie is perfect.
No, Barbarian having post-credit.
Yes, right. Barbarian is a special case. I recommend anyone who hasn't seen Barbarian go on to HBO Max right now as soon as you're done listening to this pod and go watch it and do not look at anything about it.
Yeah, don't look up it. Don't Google. Go in blind.
Don't even watch the trailer.
Open your eyes and watch the movie. But yeah.
Still one of my favorite movie-going experiences of the year. But for the most part, if you have a movie that lends itself well to, why not the bloopers? Like, what happened? When did we as a society decide that we were over bloopers?
I know when we were done. It's when we stopped making DVDs, Ariel. There's no extras, no behind the scenes, no commentary. Streaming services killed the bloopers.
Bring it back.
You know what
this
they
is
are
making? Save movies, Grace. This is gonna save movies. The promise of bloopers.
They are making a slight comeback. Like Instagram and TikTok reels. There's many. The only problem is that like I feel like I watched the same Office bloopers a million times. Mm-hmm. Like the same scenes where they crack up like a million times.
Yes.
But I feel like release. TikTok, put them on TikTok. Put your Ticket to Paradise bloopers on TikTok. I feel like that would be a hit.
Release the TikTok cut. I want to see this movie in 77 60 minute videos.
Give me the Quibi cut.
Oh my God, rest in peace, Quibi. Yeah. That as a society, we have not grappled with what went wrong. And Quibi, we're afraid to examine how we got to Quibi and how we move on from Quibi.
Yeah, I agree. I'm trying to look back what else would have been funny that we've covered in the past few weeks that would have had good
Amsterdam. That would have been way more entertaining. I don't know. I somehow think
The Invitation, I would have watched that.
Somehow think the bloopers for Amsterdam would have been just as boring.
Yeah, the Marcel the Shell with Shoes on post-credits bloopers would have been great. That would have been great, right?
That would have been really adorable. Cute. I mean, it would have taken extra credit. It would have taken a lot of extra effort to create the shell, but...
Wait, what do you mean? Nothing. Marcel, what do you mean?
Nothing, no. Marcel is real. I'm sorry. I don't want to step on anyone's dreams. Santa Claus is real, and so is Marcel the Shell.
You know, it just dropped today was the Santa Claus's trailer with Tom Hanks, Tim Allen. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Is everything Ticket to Paradise? Every Ticket to Paradise out?
I think this ticket has expired. I think we're done.
Yeah. It's a really big movie week, though, the next 2 weeks. There's lots that I think we want to talk about and perhaps not enough time. So we'll do our best to fit everything in. But I feel like I'm going to be at the theaters a lot in the next little while.
I'm recording. Yeah. I like showed up 2 hours early to the theater. I'm sitting here recording right now.
Wow. Wow. That's impressive. Like
clean around me from the last movie.
Yeah, we will be talking about Tar at some point. It's had a limited release, but it's getting a full release on October 28th. I think that's definitely worth checking out.
Yes.
I think it's going to get big.
Bow down to the queen, Kate Blanchett.
It's a tad long, but I think worth
it. It's a Tar long? Oh, yeah, no, it's a Tar.
Tar long. Rochester Nino tweeted about Tar today. Did you see this, Ariel?
I did see it. The Venn diagram of the greater RHAP universe is The Amazing Race and the movie Tar.
Yeah, agreed. Pray for the Devil. I'm interested to see. It feels like not getting as much buzz as some of these other horror movies. Got a lot more competition, but
I pray that it's good because I may see it myself.
Oh, Eric, one thing I would talk about. It is spooky season still. You're familiar with Shudder, the horror streaming
service. Yes, the app. Streaming service, really, at this point.
I'm going to try to check out, and no problem, but there's a four-part documentary called Fear for Queers, which talks about the examination of how queer people have been involved in horror movies from the beginning and how queer people are often feeling very othered and found themselves in horror movies and then the complications of that as well, of like being demonized and vilified and all that stuff. But I don't know if anybody's watched it. Let me know, because I think I'm going to I don't have a Shudder subscription, so I'm hoping I'll get a free trial and I'll watch. I think, but I've heard there's a lot. Shudder service, people talk about being the best streaming service out there at the moment.
So. It has a lot. What I know for sure is, as someone who hasn't even yet dabbled in it, but I know a couple of people who swear by it. It has a lot of options, and it has a lot of what other services have, and I guess ultimately really only movies have, but this is all horror. So you know, you get like a horror movie and then not many right away. It depends on the time of the year, but you get a lot of options consistently, weekly, sometimes multiple times a week. And like, seemingly some of the quality of some of these movies is like consistently high.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I've heard. That they
I shudder to think how long it would take me to watch all these movies.
I know. Yeah. They apparently produce content and like to like basically fine to amazing. Apparently it's like what they're putting out. So that's fun.
I love an amazing horror movie.
Yeah. So if you've seen Fear for Queers or Queer for Fears, I don't know which way it is. Let me know. I'm interested.
I like Queer for Fears.
Queer for Fears.
It sounds like a band.
I think it's Queer for Fear. I think, yeah, the history of queer horror. Yeah, I'm gonna check it out. I think. All right. I'm watching a lot of horror movies recently. A lot of stuff I have never checked off my bucket list. It's been very, very fun. As we approach Halloween, yeah, watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
The original or one of
the original? Yeah, wow. And then I went from 1974. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
Was that your first time?
Yeah. There's a bunch of I'm very like horror. I don't even know what the word is. I did not watch a lot of horror. That's what I was trying to say.
Right.
When I was younger. Yeah. So
now you must filleth your cup.
I know. Yeah. So again, if folks have recommendations, let me know. All right.
Where can people reach you if they did want to?
Well, it's a great question. I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace. You can catch me. We've wrapped up our House of the Dragon coverage. We are covering Interview with the Vampire with Philly, The Crown, as I mentioned. Shannon Gus and I are talking about that. So lots to look forward to. Over on Rob as a podcast, I have Roll Call, the board game a show. We played Clue last week, so that's very exciting. Ariel, what about you?
Oh my God, Clue. What about me? I am on Twitter at that other Ariel. I'm covering, speaking of spooky season, I am almost done with my journey through the Mike Flanagan Netflix universe with co-host Lasagna. We are finally covering Midnight Mass. It just released this week, and we are finally covering our last entry, although not the last entry for Mike Flanagan. There's another one coming next year that I'm sure we'll get to eventually. Midnight Club is the latest entry into that, and we will be discussing that. I believe that podcast will be releasing on Halloween proper. Spooky. Also White Lotus. I can't wrap my head around the fact that White Lotus is premiering the day before Halloween. It feels like I totally get the House of the Dragon of it all, but it just feels like somehow
in a way the week.
But then what do you put there? You know, you lose people's habitual viewing of the Sunday nights. I'm covering that with Dr. Amanda. I'm super excited to get into that. We put a lot of time into our season one rewatch, and we'll be back with some special guests for season two as well in Sicily, as my co-host likes to say.
I believe the premiere guest has been announced on a podcast.
I am unaware of the. No, I'm kidding. I did not sign up for this. Yes, we will be having Ross Cernino on. So yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back next week. I believe we have a doubleheader. Which order they come out in, who knows, but we are going to talk about the aforementioned Tar, as well as Banshees of Inisherin, the Colin Farrell flick. Very fun. I've seen both of these, and I'm very excited to talk about both of them with you, and specifically Ariel. Do you know anything about Banshees? Do you know anything about
only seen the trailer.
I feel like the trailer ruined a big thing from the movie that I think people shouldn't know, but that's fine.
I will say this. I was very my viewings of the trailer are very skeptical. I'm like, I don't want to believe that this movie is good. So I've been very pleasantly surprised with some of the buzz so far, including your non-spoiler review of it.
I could be absolutely wrong. It could be not funny at all to everybody else. So we'll see.
It's just like, we'll see. I'm going to come in hot next week. This movie was trash.
We've never had a tremendous golf in our pit. Like it's either like, I really liked it. And you're like, yeah, it was good. It was fine. You know, like, I feel like we've never had like, I hated that movie. And I'm like, I love it. Yeah, so that would be fun at some point. Yeah.
I look forward to that day.
All right. Well, for me personally, I hope it's not Banshees, but it'll be very fun if it is. So Banshees and Tar with Cate Blanchett next week. Looking forward to it. I am Grace. That is Ariel. We are Post Show Recaps Leader. Until then, bye-bye.